Today, we're going to talk with Dr. Caxton O'Pair. He's a medical doctor and a certified by the board family practice doctor who has first-line experience with COVID patients, both hospitalized and in the emergency department. And we're going to talk to him a little bit about his new book, which is coming out within the week, The Hydroxychloroquine Debate. Dr. O'Pair has been on my show two or three times previously, talking about various aspects of COVID-19, and we may talk about some of the things that he's talked about already, but we'll try to talk about some new things also. Caxton, how are you doing today?
Fine, Dr. Anderson. How are you?
I'm doing good. Okay, so you're a little low on your volume.
Okay. How about now?
Yeah, that's better.
That's better. Okay.
Try to speak at that level so everybody can hear you.
Sure.
One of the things that we talked about earlier was that you said what you thought was the most common cause of death in a COVID-19 patient that was hospitalized, and that was cytokine storm. Now, people are talking about bradykinin storm, and you said that there's some similarities and overlap and whatever. So do you have anything that you can tell the general public that's of importance for them to know between these two entities?
Yes. So we know that patients do develop cytokines in response to illness, and that cytokines actually do everything that COVID-19 is accused of doing, and they're measured and they're found to be high. So we already know that cytokines are an established method by which the virus kills people. Now, there's a new concept, and as science evolves, we always find out that the earth is not flat. So I'm willing to defer to the bradykinin storm. But in either case, either the bradykinin, which is one single nine amino acid protein, versus a multiple other number of chemicals in the body, both the cytokine storm and the bradykinin storm can take place simultaneously at the same time, and the virus can induce both the bradykinin storm, if that's what's causing the symptoms. But I guarantee you that both the cytokines and the bradykinin, which is one single agent, are responsible together for this reaction and the deaths that occur in COVID-19. It's not just the bradykinin. As a matter of fact, the bradykinin hypothesis or concept came from a computer simulation. The second largest computer in the world put that stuff together, which is great, but you notice the most effective treatments were not directed at bradykinin. They were directed at cytokines, and they were extremely effective. A case in point is hydroxychloroquine. Hydroxychloroquine has immune modulation, and it affects cytokines, diminishes cytokine storm formation, and it's been shown to be very, very effective. Hydroxychloroquine, I'm not sure I've seen any literature where it directly attacks the bradykinin release process. So, yes, the bradykinin can be responsible for some parts of the COVID-19 syndrome of death, but I am still going to say, until otherwise completely proven and disproved, that cytokines are a major part of the death sentence for COVID-19 patients.
Okay.
And unfortunately, yes.
All right. Now, you have a new book that's going to be coming out very shortly. Can you give us the major points of that book that you talk about?
Sure. The book is called The Hydroxychloroquine Debate, and it asks the question and answers that question in the book of, is hydroxychloroquine really that dangerous, or is it really that powerful? Which is it? And the reader will be able to see that hydroxychloroquine is actually probably the single most effective drug for preventing patients getting really, really sick with COVID-19 and ending up in the hospital. But not only that, besides the fact that hydroxychloroquine remains the single most effective drug that we also have clinical trials that have been designed to make hydroxychloroquine look bad. Unfortunately, in order to do that, you have to give very dangerous doses of hydroxychloroquine. You'd say that's not possible in the 21st century. I say it's actually what is being done. It's like Tuskegee syphilis study being done over and again. Only this time it's blacks, it's whites, it's Brazilians, it's Americans, it's British. It's all over, wherever they can find an investigator who will give lethal doses of hydroxychloroquine. They're actually giving those lethal doses to patients. And I actually take literature and papers and journals and show the exact studies and why we need to do something about this.
Okay, so I think that this whole thing of misinformation about hydroxychloroquine is based in the fact of two things. One, that Big Pharma, the corporations that are controlling our drugs and everything, have a vested interest in not letting hydroxychloroquine, which is cheap and generic, come on the market. And two, that there are elements that, for whatever reason, think that the world's population is too great and needs to be decreased, and that this is the first step in the plan to bring that about. Can you tell me whether or not you agree, disagree, or partially?
I agree with you, but you know, there's a little extra thing in the book that I bring to light. Maybe I never spoke about this with you before. The vaccine that they want to promote, I think all the pharmaceutical companies have sat down their CEOs and calculated how many trillions of dollars they're going to make. And so even though they're competitors with one another, they're going to come together and lend each other their manufacturing facilities, because they're going to make trillions, not hundreds of billions, but trillions of dollars. And so they're going to come together and try to do whatever they have to do, even force laws into place, because they already have all the lobbyists. But in the midst of that, there is another punch line that I want to give to the people who are going to read this book. Hydroxychloroquine is not just a threat to the pharmaceutical company because of its effect in COVID-19. Hydroxychloroquine has actually been found to be a chemotherapeutic adjuvant. In other words, it's helpful in certain cancers. As a matter of fact, resistant breast cancer, resistant lung cancer, resistant ovarian cancer, and even metastatic brain cancer. Hydroxychloroquine has been found in exact studies to be useful. As a matter of fact, in one of those studies, they found out that they needed about maybe 3 to 10% only of the amount of chemotherapy to give to patients. So if hydroxychloroquine is allowed to continue to attack COVID-19 and be victorious, the entire pharmaceutical industry may collapse, not just from the hydroxychloroquine, but from another good friend of hydroxychloroquine, zinc. You see, Dr. Henderson, there are two major plagues that defy rapid solutions in the healthcare system. One is viruses, as we can see now, and two is cancer. Between hydroxychloroquine and zinc helping one another, they can attack, and there are studies that I actually show in the book. I think I put about 12 or 13 studies showing how hydroxychloroquine and zinc together actually have been shown to synergistically reduce viral infections and cut down cancer cell production. So it's a bigger threat, and they want to make sure that that threat does not continue by attacking hydroxychloroquine.
Now, in my research, I found doctors out on the front lines that are treating patients in their medical clinics with a three-drug approach, yeah, hydroxychloroquine and zinc and azithromycin. Yeah. And they're getting results kind of uniformly of almost 100% cure of the disease, almost 100% of the disease not progressing to the point of having to be hospitalized, and almost 100% of it not being fatal if you use that drug regimen. However, the other side is, whoever the other side is putting intimidation into the mix, where the doctors and the pharmacists are intimidated for using this combination. And so what is your thinking with respect to, you and I both know that it's effective, we both know that it is something that we ought to be doing, but we're not getting it done. I mean, I might have to drive to Texas in order to be able to take this therapy, because people, for whatever reason, don't want it to be used. Now, that really makes me sad.
You know, I think that's one of the reasons why I'm driven to write this book, driven to have this interview with a wonderful person like yourself, who is also very, very passionate, and have a lot of respect for you, Dr. Anderson. Think about it this way. Doctors don't read journals. They read the abstract section of the conclusion in the journal because they don't have time. And a group of bunch of scientists and doctors have gotten together and have created several layers of deception. And they know that doctors will not read the journals. They will only read the abstract. So they will say hydroxychloroquine is ineffective. Let me give an illustration. There is one particular study in the book. I listed a lot of studies there. I wrote it in such a way that a layperson can read it. There may be one or two very difficult studies there, but the majority, maybe 89% of the studies in the book, will be easy for anybody, high school and above, to be able to read. So they wanted to tell us, you know, they already know the truth. So they're trying to tell us that hydroxychloroquine is not effective in preventing infection. So what did they do? They looked for people who had been exposed. You know how highly contagious COVID-19 patients are with the virus. So they said you had to be less than 6 feet away from the patient and for more than 10 minutes. So that's a really high exposure. In fact, in the hospital, people get just a few seconds in a room with COVID patient, boom, even they have a mask, sometimes they get infected. So less than 6 feet for more than 10 minutes, that's a lot of exposure. And the next thing to do was they wanted to see whether hydroxychloroquine prevented infection. And they waited sometimes 3-4 days maximum before they started them on hydroxychloroquine. If you wait 3-4 days, you've waited too late. But that was not the only bad thing they did in the study. If you want to give a patient a medicine to prevent an illness, after they've been exposed. I think you ought to check to see whether they're exposed, particularly with COVID. In about 42% of the patients in that study, after they had a high exposure, they did not even check to see whether they were already infected. 3 to 4 days of being after being exposed to a COVID patient, and we're talking high exposure, Dr. Anderson, they did not test this patient before they started giving them the medicine. Now, after they give them hydroxychloroquine, in the two groups, only two patients became hospitalized. But you know, when you lie to people, you would try to manipulate the numbers, and they were still trying to say that hydroxychloroquine was ineffective in preventing infection. Okay? So COVID-19 kills people. But here, you have people who are exposed to COVID-19, and they are not hospitalized. Over 300 patients, 354 patients, who were exposed and got hydroxychloroquine. Only one of them got hospitalized. And you don't think that's important for the world to know? That's exactly what was done in this study by Bulawir et al. So the goal is to make hydroxychloroquine look bad. My goal is to expose those clinical trials. And if for any reason the international court, the Helsinki laws, the Nuremberg laws, can be invoked because several professors have gathered together to kill patients just because they have a master who was giving them some money, then they might end up in jail, if not worse, for killing patients. In the book, I shared the ideas some of these professors even had. They were so happy that hydroxychloroquine doesn't work. And it was a total disgrace to us as physicians that these professors were endorsing the recovery study, for example, which was another study.
Jackson, let's move on to a question that most people want answered.
Okay.
I'm not sure you can answer it, but give your opinion.
Sure.
And that is there something wrong, diabolical, or otherwise unscientific in the position of Dr. Anthony Fauci?
There is something wrong, there is something diabolical, and there's something corrupt and unscientific in Dr. Fauci's position. You see, all these journals, I have some of them on index cards in front of me here, like the New England Journal on the Brazilian study, the New England Journal on Bulawir, that they were not testing patients and they were trying to see. Yes, Dr. Anderson, there is something fishy, and it's probably diabolical. You know, maybe like a champion who the mafia have held and said, I've cut off your wife's finger. If you don't throw this fight, I'll pay you money. Maybe Dr. Fauci is in a difficult situation that we don't know. Maybe he's being blackmailed somehow, and we don't know. But whatever it is, his position is an ugly position. Because the same journals, you see, when he's interviewed on television, he always says, I only stay with the science and the data. I only stay with the science and the data. But I have in front of me, and I put in the book about 13 or 14 pivotal classic studies that are fueling his thought process. And I'm not as skilled as Dr. Fauci in looking at these research papers. And if I can see all these holes and all this crooked manipulation in the papers, I bet you he also sees them. So when he gets on television and says hydroxychloroquine is ineffective, he must know then that he is not telling the truth. Why he is not telling the truth? Maybe he's been held by the mafia, something ridiculous, or he's part of the plot itself. That is beyond me. But when the book is out, because the only thing you hear Dr. Fauci say, almost robotic, is it's the science and the data. I only go with the science and the data. Well, he's so good at looking at the science and the data. So when the book comes out, he'll be able to see that there's nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. You say you use data and science. Here's the science and the data. Here are the discrepancies. Here are the intentional distortion and manipulation of numbers. So with all this, Dr. Fauci, are you still with the science and the data? That's a question you will have to answer. I don't think he's on the right place at all, because he was the first, and his NIAID, National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, sponsored the and published the article on how to use hydroxychloroquine in coronavirus situations. And I would have thought that in February, March, or April, he would have been the first person saying, we are going to try hydroxychloroquine, and if it works, that will be awesome. It's as if he's bitter about hydroxychloroquine. So I'm not even sure whether he's not part of the plot itself, or he's under pressure to be part or a pawn in the plot that's much bigger than any one of us can know.
Well, I hope you send Dr. Fauci a copy of your book so that he can't say, well, I'm only in it for the science and the data.
Yes.
Okay. Caxton, do you have any other points that you would like to get out before we close this interview today?
I just want people to know that the real heroes of COVID-19 are not people whose books have been written about them, like Dr. Fauci, a book has been written about him as a hero of COVID-19. The real heroes are the kind of people that I'm working with here in Rio Grande, the nurses who have left their homes for weeks, months at a time, and being exposed to COVID, getting infected, getting treated, getting admitted, as well as those doctors who are fighting against all odds, people like yourself. You might not see yourself as a hero. You guys are the ones fighting day and night for the truth to come out, putting everything on the line, risking reputation, risking opportunity, just to make sure that people know the truth and start learning more of the truth. And I think the third category really are the doctors who are insisting and treating patients. And remember, these doctors also are not just facing a risk. If something goes wrong as they are treating patients, then their heads are going to be on the guillotine. But instead of these patients reporting the doctors, guess what? They are glad because they are surviving. They are getting better. So that's what I want to share. And that for people to please stay safe. Look at what's been done in other countries. Try to do what they're doing there. They're wearing masks. They're protecting themselves. And think about hospitals. Most of the staff inside hospitals don't have COVID. Why don't they have COVID? The hospitals are filled with COVID patients. But the CEO of the hospital, the administrators, the people that don't directly take care of those patients, they go around wearing their masks. They're not getting infected. And so masks must have their place. Until we control this virus, and the only thing that can help, hydroxychloroquine, we're going to prove to you in about a couple of weeks or days that it's still the most effective drug out there, and they're trying to destroy its reputation. And that's about to change. Thank you, Dr. Anderson.
Well, thank you for being on the program. And I'd just like to say in closing, go over to my podcast and listen to the program where I recommend vitamin D. Vitamin D, I think, since we can't get hydroxychloroquine, will be the safest thing that you can get because it's over the counter. And I recommend that you try to get your level of vitamin D over 40 nanograms per cc. And try that, and maybe you will escape the virus. Caxton, thank you so much for being on the program today, and try to get your book, The Hydroxychloroquine Debate, and hear what you have to say.
I'll send you a copy for sure.
Okay, bye.